The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. On this edition of the podcast, we're talking theatre with my guests Taylor Genyon and James Piercy from TB Productions, who've written a new dementia-based play called Fluff. Well, Taylor and James, it's a delight to have you as my guests here on the D Word. Always excited when we've got productions involving dementia as a subject, because they are kind of few and far between, but it's always nice to talk to people involved in that area. I mean, before we get into Fluff, which is your production, I mean, it's, I wonder, if you start with you, Taylor, tell us a little bit about TB Productions and kind of where you started.
Okay, so we definitely started kind of from the ground up, and we're still very much working on that. But me and James, we met on a writing course online during COVID, and we wanted to work together. We just liked each other's writing style. So from then, we decided to write a play together. After a long process, Fluff was kind of born. And then, I mean, I'm kind of cutting things out here, but we did a community tour. We ended up working with Watford Council, and we put together this community interest company, which then became TP Productions, because we just kind of found that we loved the work that we were doing and we wanted to do more of it. So it's been quite a long road, and we're still working, but it's been very rewarding, hasn't it, James?
It has, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to...
It's it's obviously, I talk to people all the time, actually, where positive things have come out of COVID, because COVID tends to get people using technology. And, you know, in your case, James, obviously, it was, you know, the spark that got you two together and writing.
It was. And I think COVID obviously was something that was unprecedented, and no one really saw it coming. And then I think when it did come along, and we were given like long stretches of time alone, if some of us were alone, if people are lucky to be with family, that's great. And I think I was in a situation where I was kind of isolated, and I was kind of craving some sort of creativity. And luckily enough, something came along, and it was weekly, and we could get together with other people, and we could just do some work and discuss work that we'd been working on and throw ideas around and kind of encourage each other. And then ultimately those kind of sessions become the thing that you look most forward to, especially in COVID, because it was a chance to reconnect with people. And obviously it wasn't in a physical sense, but being able to just be on a Zoom call with 10 or 15 people and to be able to actually have some sort of communication was really lovely to have. And obviously I met Taylor. I'm from Birmingham and she's from down south. So geographically, we're nowhere near each other. We probably would never have met in any other circumstances. So it's nice to know that good things came out of COVID, but it's nice to know that this is one connection that was made. And I know that many other people probably made very meaningful connections in COVID in ways that they didn't think would have happened. And like you said, technology played a really big part in that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, the show that I'm doing now went kind of Zoom only, and you know, it's allowed chatting to people, you know, all over the world, as we do. So you both, you know, went on the writing course. COVID was there, started putting some ideas together. Fluff. I mean, Taylor, tell us a bit about, you know, how did the idea for that come about?
So an interesting one. We never kind of sat down and were like, we want to write something around dementia or anything like that. It didn't happen that way. We were just having really open conversations, and we were talking about our personal experiences and our families, and we had some similarities in our families that we kind of connected on. And then we did kind of start talking about memory, but it was quite a generalized conversation about just memory in general and how people remember things in different ways depending on who you are and how you've perceived it. And then it, from there, it just evolved into these conversations about dementia, because James and I both have personal links with people that we've known that have had it. So that's where it started.
And James, I mean, tell us a little bit about your personal link with dementia.
Well, when I was growing up, I had my nan, who was my mother's mother. She was married to my grandfather for over 60 years, and he unfortunately died quite young. And she lived a further like 15 years without him. And she was like deeply depressed and was in grief. And unfortunately, like, her grief took a turn into alcoholism, and I think the alcohol kind of started to affect her memory. And then when I looked at the time, I was really young and I didn't quite understand like what was happening to my grandmother and why she was suddenly forgetting things and why her personality was starting to change. And I think as a child, I just thought, oh, this is something to do with grief, and maybe it's affected her in this way. And then obviously as I started to get older and I started to look further into it, I realized that there is actually alcohol-related dementia that can affect people's brains, and it can start to cause behavior that's a little bit unsociable and a little bit frightening if you're from the outside looking in. And she was never like diagnosed with it, but the more research I did afterwards, I was aware of obviously then the effects that alcoholism can have on the brain and how that then can affect a person that you love deeply. So even though it was never really like a clean diagnosis of Alzheimer's or dementia, as an adult, I now look at it and I'm like, that's very much what she was experiencing. And in a way, it's a shame that we wasn't able to get the support or the care that she may have needed. And maybe that was because there wasn't the information was available to us. Like I said, I was only a child at the time, so it's not like I put that weight on my shoulders. But I think as an adult, it's one of those things that I wish if I was older at the time, maybe I could have been more of a support to her during that period.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains, or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The station that makes you feel good.
We now have over 40 shows a week on UK Health Radio, dealing with every aspect of health. And if you miss anything first time round, all the shows are available for listen again and download from the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. My guests this week are Taylor and James from TB Productions, who both have a close link to dementia.
So my granddad was diagnosed with dementia, so a bit different. This is my mum's dad. Again, though, something that I didn't really know anything about. I don't think my family did either. So we were all kind of taken aback by it. And when he was kind of becoming confused and acting slightly differently and not himself and things like that, it took us quite a long time to kind of figure out what was going on, because it wasn't something that we had experienced before, or we knew much about, to be honest. Again, I agree with James. I was a bit younger and it can be quite frightening at times. So I did definitely experience that. And also seeing family members, I think from my perspective, my parents were almost like carers to my granddad for a while before he had to go into homes. And seeing my mum be upset and things like that, well, I found really difficult. as well as obviously seeing the impact that it was having on my granddad and how he was changing and acting in a way that I didn't understand at the time.
So you both got a shared experience. You both wanted to write. I mean, James, how do you start to turn that shared experience into approaching a production?
Well, I think, like Taylor said earlier on, the discussion did start around memories and choices that we make in life. And almost if you were coming to the end of your life, like, what would you look back and reflect on? And what would be the things that you would remember fondly? And then when the discussion of dementia came around, it was almost quite sad to think that maybe if you are suffering with dementia, like, you might not necessarily be able to have control over the memories that you do recall. So the moments that you do remember might not necessarily be pleasant experiences, or you might misplace the ones that are pleasant to you, like family members' names or relationships that you have, or if you've had a grandchild, you might forget that that was your grandchild. So it started to look at the idea of the structure of memory, and if you were in a place of confusion, what would you recall, what would be something that you would want to find but couldn't quite find the words to express that. So it started out, we looked at the idea of a woman's life, and we started to like pinpoint memories that she might have. So a birthday, a job, a relationship that she may have once had, the connection with her own parents. And so when we started to break it down into singular moments, we were then able to kind of piece it together as a cohesive piece. But then it also then made a lot of sense to kind of jumble the memories and the scenes up and see how that structure would work. And if it was in a non-linear narrative, would this kind of give an authentic a look at what it must be like to experience dementia on a day-to-day basis? So that's kind of how we originated the project, was looking at memories in a singular and then putting them together as a collective and seeing how that would then play out.
So you've done that work, Taylor. Where did Fluff come from as a title?
So Fluff, I'm trying to think of how that actually originated. James, can you remember how that originated?
I think it was in one of the earlier scenes that we were writing, and we were talking about her identity and how she's remembered by others, and Fluff the character, and again, like, where this came from, it's like a stroke of genius, or gifted from someone. We decided that she would have slightly unruly hair as a child, and she'd look a little bit like Einstein, and she would always get bullied for this. And then it kind of came down to the fact that her father, who she has a really great connection with, would nickname her Fluff, and so then she then has this fondness to the name of it. And then as the whole of dementia starts to take over, it's like Fluff is kind of how she identifies singularly. And it's because of this nice connection that she has to her father. So even though there is a memory of bullying and people would call her this, it's like it still is linked with this endearment that she would have with her father. So it came from unruly, uncontrollable hair syndrome, which then became...
which is a thing. It turns
out.
Yeah,
it is.
Uncontrollable hair syndrome.
Absolutely. Well, I'd stick with a stroke of genius, James. That's what I'd stick with. Definitely.
Yes. It was a gift from the gods.
But then people did then start saying, which again was a bit of a happy accident, that the Fluff had obviously connotations with like the brain turning to Fluff and things like that. So it did just start in a really early draft, and then it just became something that meant much more than what it originally was.
Yeah.
So you got this far, and for the uninitiated like me, who's kind of scribbled down on bits of paper but never attempted to turn it into anything meaningful, where do you go from there when you've got presumably the makings of a script, you got a title, what happens next?
Well, the best part about the whole situation, I think, was the fact that we were working in collaboration, and I think both of us had probably worked singularly. I think as a writer, you tend to write material alone, and you probably don't let people see it, but like until you feel brave enough to people for people to see it, because you don't want to be criticized, or you don't want this piece of work that you've been working on to be rejected or told that it's not very good. But I think working in collaboration with Taylor was great, because I think we were able to lean on each other and really build a support network between the two of us, to the point where we were like, no, we believe that this has got potential and it's got legs. So then the next step after that is to then invite people to read it and to give feedback and to let us know what they think about it. And that can just be like friends and family. But I think we were quite lucky that we'd been a part of this writers group where we met. So we had a handful of other writers already on hand to give their feedback. And then from there, I think, was the next step that we started to approach Scratch Nights?
Yes. So we then started to approach Scratch Nights, but we found that very difficult because of the nature of the non-linear structure of the show. And you always have to have sort of 10-15 minutes of material in a Scratch Night, and it just didn't really serve our show, so that didn't really work. So we ended up then doing a work in progress sharing at the Drayton Arms, and we invited lots of like family, friends, creatives, people we knew, and we did some like leafleting as well to other people in the area, and we got quite a good audience, and then we got feedback from that, and we continued with our like research and development, kind of getting it up and getting the audience responses for a long time. I'd say, well, how long do you think we did that whole kind of, at least years worth that?
Yeah, I think even longer than that. We've been working on the show since 2020 and it's now 24. And I think it was probably only even just recently that we've had to kind of say, okay, we're solidifying the show now. Like, we've done everything we can with it. But for a really long time, we would have audience feedback. And what was so brilliant about the audience feedback was how many people had actually dealt with dementia in their own personal life. And so they would come to us with their stories and they would tell us things that we'd be like, oh, we've not heard of that, or we've not come across that before. And so we would kind of use that then, and we'd like to incorporate it into the show, because I think one of our biggest goals with the show was always to be as authentic as possible, and to do it with deep sincerity, and to make sure that we're not doing something out of it's not exploitative, but we're not trying to like sensationalize something that's so meaningful and, you know, has affected so many people. So the feedback, not only was it great in terms of, okay, how can we make the writing better, how can we make the production better, it was like, well, no, ultimately what we want to do is connect with people on an emotional level, and if we can use that feedback and incorporate it somehow in there, then even better. And so that's why we kept the feedback being open to people's responses as long as possible, because we always wanted to make sure that it was the best it could be in terms of its authenticity.
Yeah, and in different areas too. So we did the one in London, we did it in Birmingham, we did it where I live in Watford, we did a community tour around different community halls and things. So we kind of went to different areas to get different perspectives from different people, and that was really helpful.
Was that interesting in terms of perspectives you got and the feedback you got? Did it vary with your audience depending on where they were geographically?
I'd say, I don't know if it varied geographically, because it's kind of a universal issue, but it definitely varied depending on if they had a connection or they knew someone with dementia or not. We definitely had different responses from people that kind of knew about the illness and people that didn't. They kind of picked up different things from it and definitely had a different emotional connection to it, I would say. James, do you think any different?
No, I agree with you. I think not that people who have never experienced it wouldn't appreciate the show, because I think people did. And I think there's always that lingering thing of, like, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's affects, and I think if I'm correct in this, it's like over 50 million people at the moment currently live with it, and it's like continues to grow. So at some point it can, and hopefully not everyone has to, but it could affect people's lives that they didn't see coming. And so if they come along to the show and it hasn't affected them yet, yes, they might not have the same experience that someone who currently is already dealing with it has, but they can come along and they can find something out that might inform some sort of response that they have further on down the line, whether that's through the show or whether it's through a discussion that they have after the show or the materials that we use provided to us by the charities. because I think it's important to be aware of it and to know the signs and how you can help people.
Yeah, I think one thing that did come up was people that had a connection with it or kind of knew more about it would laugh more at the funny scenes. So we had this kind of thing that we found really strange where people were really reluctant to laugh. And it took us ages to kind of unpick, like, why is this not working? What's going on? And a lot of feedback we got was like, oh, it's about dementia. So we can't laugh. We thought it was funny, but we can't laugh. So, but people that had experiences would say the opposite. They'd say, like, I loved that it was funny because there are so many moments that are funny. And so that was really interesting, I think.
No, I agree. And there's kind of like a, and not to like say this in an offensive way, but there is an absurdity sometimes when you're dealing with someone who is slightly out of sorts in terms of where they are and who they're talking to the point where they can say things that are so random, but you have to find levity in the moment. And I think, because like they always say, it's like, if you don't laugh, then you'll cry. And I think we knew that, like, yes, you might feel like, oh, this is a show about dementia and therefore we can't chuckle, but it's like, but we want you to, because it's like, you need to have that, you need to find the levity, like the lightness in the moment, because sometimes it can be too dark, and if it is, and it can be crippling, it can be a large weight to bear.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've hit a real nail on the head there in terms of my friends who are living with dementia come out with some of the funniest stuff that I've ever heard. And, you know, they love humour, but they do find it difficult. The point you were making, Taylor, that if people don't know about it, then they look at it as a terminal condition full of darkness and something that, oh, no, couldn't possibly laugh about. So I think, you know, what you found is that those people that are, you know, almost in the club, not to, you know, use facile words about it, are the people that understand what you're trying to put across. I mean, what do you hope that those people who are not on the inside will get from Fluff?
Definitely an understanding. So like I kind of said earlier, before my experience with my granddad, I didn't know anything really about dementia other than the film The Notebook, which is obviously very romanticized and things. I'm not dissing that at all, but that's all I kind of knew. And I think that we're just trying to kind of educate and show lots of different sides to it and open up conversations about it as well. I think it's really important that we just have open conversations about it and we're not scared to. So I think that's what I would say. James, anything to add?
I think in one of the very earlier on when we were putting the show together and we started to get audiences in and we were having discussions and, you know, audience Q&As with post show, like someone said a very similar thing of like, what do you want people to take away from the show? And, you know, Taylor mentioned a few things, but I think on a very kind of personal level and an emotional level, I want people to value the relationship that they have and the people they have in their lives. And I would love more than anything for someone to come see our show and after seeing it, like think of like their mother or their father or their friends and to give them a call and to like just be available and to be there with one another and, you know, to value those relationships while they still are the way we want them to be. And hopefully, you know, people aren't affected by it too greatly, but, you know, it does happen. And so I think just making those, appreciating those deep connections that we have with people in life is really, really important. And if people can walk away thinking, yeah, I want to call my mom after seeing that show and speak to her, then that would be just the best response to have.
And just to add also valuing, like, should somebody, you know, have dementia, valuing that relationship too, because sometimes we've had such interesting personal stories and things from people where they say, actually, they became much closer with their parent or the person they knew when they had this diagnosis, and they started to spend more time with them and take them to events and things. And there was something really nice about that. So again, and something quite interesting in that too.
Yeah. UK Health Radio.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Got some great guests lined up for the podcast over the summer, but if you're working on a project you want more people to know about, or you've got a story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us on social media, just look out for TDW Radio, or email us at tdwradio@gmail.com. On this edition, we're talking about TB Productions' play, Fluff.
But you also get to go down memory lane yourself, because if you're then conducting or you're trying to, like, you know, talk to people and remember those memories together, it's like you're also forced into a situation where that you have to talk about it and you have to revisit it and rediscover it. And maybe you might learn something about that. Like we said at the very beginning, it's like memories aren't always accurate. They're always like a copy of a copy anyway. I think someone says like a memory, whatever memory you have of a memory is it's a photocopy anyway. It's always constantly fading or changing, or the narrative slightly differs each time you tell it, whether we embellish it or we forget it. So I think even as a carer, I think like there's joy in being able to revisit your own life.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a two-way street, isn't it? Because what's come across is you've both learned quite a lot out of it, as hopefully the audience have. Just a little bit more about the nuts and bolts, Taylor. You mentioned supports of charities and, you know, those people who have helped you put it all together.
Yeah, so that was right at the beginning. We approached Alzheimer's Society, Hearts, Musical Memories and Trauma Breakthrough, because there's a strand of kind of intergenerational trauma as well that the show explores alongside dementia. And they have just been amazing, the charities that we've been working with. So we've worked with them to research and get loads of research from them. Hearts, Musical Memories in particular was a really interesting one, because my grandfather, something that I really remember about him, which is a really wholesome, lovely memory when he had dementia, that I think a lot of people relate to, this idea of music. And he would always just absolutely come to life when he sang My Way by Frank Sinatra and Phil Collins and things, and he would just remember all the words and he would just be in his element, and it was just amazing. It was like magical. So it was really important that we incorporated that into the show, this idea of music. And so working with Hearts Musical Memories, who do amazing work and they do singing workshops for people with dementia, was really insightful and just really helpful. And obviously Alzheimer's Society have a wealth of knowledge, and they send us things as well that we could, with booklets that we put out at the end of shows to help people, and have kind of really helped us in our understanding of the symptoms and also how people can deal with it, ways that they can deal with dementia. So yeah, the charities have been amazing, and Trauma Breakthrough too, the same thing, have been really supportive of the show and offering us loads of advice.
Yeah, interesting you say. Yeah, Hearts Musical Memories were one of the first people I think we had on the show nearly 5 years ago. So it's kind of come full circle there. In terms of, you know, the script, the writing and the subject, you've got to act this out and got to make it very convincing, because as you know, as you've told me over the last 20 minutes or so, there's people there with real experience, and if you don't get this right, they will find you out.
Yeah, it has been, I call it the actor's marathon. So of anything I've ever done, it's definitely the hardest but also most rewarding. I mean, it's like we said, it's non-linear, so it jumps around, which is difficult to learn for an actor. Also, she jumps around in what age she thinks she is. So, you know, one minute she's 16 and then the next minute she's in her 20s. So again, there's that going on. as alongside, like you said, the authenticity of it and having to do a lot of research and watching lots of videos and things like that to make sure that it is truthful, that the performance is truthful. And that is something I'm still, like, we still work on. I'm still researching, and I will continue to, because you just never stop finding things about it. Mm. And yeah, as an actor, it's really important that I do that work and I do that research to make sure it is truthful. That was just, has always been so important to us. And we have had feedback about that, so that is really meaningful to us. But yeah, it's no, it's not an easy job. I don't think it's an easy job.
No, and I think just to add on the back of that, I think the one thing that we always bring to the table, and especially Taylor, is I'm quite lucky. I just get to sit back and enjoy Taylor on stage for about an hour and 10 minutes, you know, going, running the gamut from A to Z of emotions. But I think the one thing that we obviously brought to it in terms of the script, but I think what Taylor elevates and rises above the material and does, and I think what audience can register straight away, is our open heart and how we're being as sincere as possible. Like, we're not doing this to showcase a brilliant actress. It's like we're trying to highlight something and let you know that we see you, we understand, and we're trying to bring more understanding to it. And I think a lot of people who have seen the show, I'm thinking of once we were at the Old Rep in Birmingham, and an audience member said that even though in the first couple of moments of the play, she was unsure of where the show was going because of the non-linear narrative, she was confident in the storytelling and the performance that she was going to get what she paid for. And by the end of it, she was like, it was really rewarding. And she had also personally dealt with dementia in her family. And so by the end of it, she was like, I knew within the first 10 minutes that you aren't going to lead me astray.
Mm. It's really important as well that she is a person, like a full rounded person, and she's not just, you know, dementia. She's not just an embodiment of dementia. It's important that she's a person with a life who is trying to navigate these things and finding her truth. So what she's going through at that time and how she is in that moment at that time. And she does think, she's 16 and she does think this is what happened. And she is confused by that. And it's just, yeah, finding her truth, which I think is what the director and I work on a lot to make sure that it's as authentic as possible.
Well, it sounds amazing. Time's running to a bit of a close, but obviously the prominent question everybody listening will be asking is where and when can we see it?
We have got two nights at Theatre 503 in London on the 22nd and 23rd of July at 7:30. And we have just got some Arts Council funding, which is amazing. So we'll also be touring it as well next year. So more to come on that. But we do have a Twitter, which is prods. And if you follow that, then we'll put all our upcoming productions on there.
Excellent. We will look forward to it. It's been a pleasure, James and Taylor. Thank you so much. Good luck with it. I'm sure it'll be a great success. And as we said earlier, James, marks of genius. That's the way I'll put it down. Thanks for being my guest on the D Word. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having us.
Many thanks to Taylor and James, and I wish them every success with Fluff. And if you're in the London area, you can get details about up-and-coming performances at theatre503.com. Well, that's it for another edition of the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on The D Word.